broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
When I looked at my grandson, he had a used condom.
But I think that it is important to understand that.
I'm feeling okay. It was a little bit nerve-wracking.
I can track you throughout the country with this device.
Keep that chicken.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News, talk, and entertainment show. And remember, we're news and where our views is the truth. And that's our bitch. All right, after a four-month search, police for finding a missing woman died in her home. After a four-month search, they found her in her house. We'll tell you how she went unnoticed in her own home. The Ground Zero Mosque may get public funding. Dave Oliva is going to join us in a moment. Dave Oliva, a student at L.A. Canyon College. He's taking law enforcement and criminal justice. He's hoping for a career in law enforcement with Los Angeles Police Department. We're going to talk about the danger of people, the danger to people of attending wild animal parks, zoos, wild animal exhibits and exhibitions, places like SeaWorld and so forth. Interesting story about a family that attended and witnessed the horrible death of that trainer in February at SeaWorld in Orlando. You remember that story? Well, they're filing a lawsuit, and we're going to talk about just exactly what their chances are in that regard. Bobby Dooley, along with her husband Steve, will talk about whether parents should friend their kids on Facebook. Just exactly how healthy is that? And tonight on our affiliate spotlight, Denver, The Truth, KTNI 101.5 in Denver and KRCN 1060 AM. In the Mile High City and in Mobile, Alabama, WAVH 106.5 FM. And don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. Downloads made every day. 2001 soon to go up on the archives, as well as a lot of other exciting things like our daily video cast. And we have right now a video cast going out. You can watch us live as well as listen to us. And you can certainly watch the on-demand video for the next 5 days. And on Sunday night, it's a classic Sunday Night Phil. So 3 hours of classic Phil Hendry on our video feed Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. A New Hampshire couple who witnessed a whale kill a trainer at SeaWorld is suing the Orlando theme park, saying that their 10-year-old son suffered emotional distress for what the child saw. Suzanne and Todd Connell. Suzanne and Todd Connell's lawsuit filed on Tuesday seeks unspecified damages, and it came a day after a federal job safety agency fined SeaWorld $75,000 for three violations uncovered during an investigation into Don Brancho's death. The killer whale, named Tilikium, in February grabbed Brancho's long hair as she lay on a cement slab and dragged her into the pool. The cause of death was drowning and traumatic injury, as you probably all well remember. It's a terrible story. It involves the traumatizing of a child, and there's a lot of kids that love to go out to the zoo, and they want to go see the animals. And, Dave, how are you tonight? Nice to talk to you.
Well, I'm good, Mr. Henry. Thanks for having us on to speak about something that a lot of people might not think to talk to law enforcement about.
Well, you are right now a student. You're not yet a Los Angeles police officer. How do you think that this kind of story, how do you think a story like this lawsuit against SeaWorld, the death of this trainer, animals in captivity, children witnessing these things, how is this in the purview of the police?
Well, I don't know. I think it's important for me as a possible law enforcement officer to see what affects children and what doesn't affect them, how safe children are. And also, I think the more important is that, I should know the law. Every police officer needs to know the law. And I think more and more police officers need to be brought in to advise on things like this, because if someone wants to file a lawsuit and they go to a lawyer and the lawyer is going to take their money. The lawyer doesn't care, because the lawyer is only there to take their money. He's not there to do anything other than, take their money.
And there's some lawyers that are going to want to do the right thing.
Well, yeah, you can say there's a lot of lawyers that want to do the right thing, but there's no law that says they have to do the right thing. There is a law that says that a police officer has to do the right thing. And so I would like to think that in the future, a person can come to a police officer, like if I was there, if I was an Orlando police officer that day, and they came to me, I said, you know, I will tell you now that you have no chance, you know, this lawsuit's got no chance, you know, and I have to tell the truth because, as a police officer, you know. And
you're talking about police officers giving legal advice?
Well, no, it wouldn't be legal advice because what it would be is I would know the law and every police officer would know the law well enough to be able to say, if you're going to sue SeaWorld, you know, I would like to at this time advise you that you've got no, there's no chance, you know, you're going to lose. And, here's why, because the law, you know, says this and so on.
Okay, well, let me ask you that. What would you do? Were you standing there as an Orlando police officer and the family came to you, this Suzanne and Todd Connell, they said that their 10-year-old son was traumatized and they want to sue SeaWorld. What would you say to them?
I would say that they, in that case, they do have a good case, and I would say yes to sue, and that they will win. And I'll tell you what...
Now, how can you say they will win?
Well, because if you're looking at the law, you know, as a police officer... I have to look at the law, you know. Okay, here it is. You went to SeaWorld to see, you know, the whale show or however they call it, okay? You have every right to expect that the animal that was brought out of the ocean or out of the jungle or whatever the area was that they did then take the animal from, you have every right to expect that that animal is going to be controlled and is going to be made to be obedient, okay? And I would say to that family, that obviously is not the case. This animal was not made to recognize that humans are now, you know, running the show. I mean, that's, you know, you snooze, you lose. You know, if you're...
Well, I don't know what you mean by if you snooze, you lose, but what you're saying...
Well, what I'm saying is if you have a zoo... And people come to your zoo, people have a reasonable expectation, and that's a phrase you should recognize, Mr. Henry. It's a legal phrase, reasonable expectation. See, I, as a police officer, I got to have a reasonable expectation, you know, that or a reasonable suspicion that, like, a felony is being committed before I go in and, you know, draw my weapon or however. And so you got to have a reasonable expectation that when you go to SeaWorld, that you have a reasonable expectation that the whale's not going to kill a human and is going to traumatize the child that you're with. And that's a reasonable expectation based on this. The human runs the world. Humans are the smartest. Humans have built, you know, have cars, everything. No animal made a car or anything like that. So the whale is going to do what a human says, if the human tells it to. But if the human doesn't, then the whale is just going to do what a whale does, which is like beat down everything around it, just like that lion, you know, in San Francisco. You know?
All right, so if I've got you right, what you're saying, Dave, is that humans, being a superior species in intelligence and just in everything, that we need to let the animal know who's in charge. No, I understand what you're saying. The human has to make sure that it's safe for the other humans.
Yes, sir. That's exactly it.
And okay, well, I think that is... Well, all right, well, then that's sensible advice, correct?
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. You're going to go in a court of law, and you have to be specific. And what was the specific thing? That the humans, because they were overly worried about PETA and overly worried about the EPA and like the Humane Society, they didn't want to, I know it's using the wrong term, but like piss off the animals, you know, by telling them what to do. And so...
All right, so you're saying that the humans at SeaWorld, that this family's got a good lawsuit because the humans at SeaWorld were cowed or they were intimidated by PETA?
Yeah, well, they were intimidated by the Humane Society, and mostly PETA is a big organization. Humane Society is the first one, though, you need to understand. So they were like the Pound and the Humane Society, which the Pound is mostly dogs and cats, but the Pound is going to also be interested in you know, whether you're pissing off the whale, not pissing off the whale, but it,
the pound. Are you talking about the pound where they put cats and dogs?
Yes, sir, the county pound, yeah. But
well, what's that got to do with whales?
It doesn't have anything to do with whales, except that those people are very environmental, or what do you call it, animal cruelty. Okay, they're very much about animal cruelty, and so they're going to be keeping a close eye on if you pissed off, or not pissed off, but, you know, if you made the whale want to be dangerous.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dave Oliva, who is a law enforcement student at L.A. Canyon College, is talking to us about... So the and there's a family that wants to sue SeaWorld because their son was traumatized witnessing the death of this poor young lady, Dawn Branshaw, who was the trainer back in February. Now, I don't think that what you're saying, I disagree with, Dave, that the people have a reasonable expectation that things are safe.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But I don't think I understand what you're saying. Now, you're saying basically making it safe means exerting control over the animals.
That is exactly right, yes, sir.
And they don't have that control.
No, sir, they do not. And they have not exerted that control. They have not told the animal, not told it, but, you know, you know, Mr. Henry, I mean, you know, the fact is we're human beings. I mean, if an animal even so much as dares to, like, think it's going to tell us what to do, it's going to die. Everybody knows that. And yet, at SeaWorld and some of these other places, they don't use what you're supposed to use to keep the animal from being like what it does. I mean, like that lion that killed that guy in San Francisco should have been taught very early on that you know, who's the boss. Okay.
Well, I'm not sure what exactly you do.
Well, there's a lot of things you can do, and I think what we've become is so afraid of the pound and the Humane Society, you know.
But the pound has nothing to do with a whale and a tiger.
No, it does not. But the pound has the technical legal, as a police officer, if I found, and this is not going to happen, but if as a police officer, if I found a whale, like, on the street, and they could keep a whale at the pound, that's where I would take it. But obviously I don't. I have to take the whale to where I have to take it, like the ocean or to, I don't know, to a mammal rescue or something like that. What I'm saying is they won't let you use a cattle prod. They won't let you use electroshock or things like that.
All right. Now I see what you're... So you're saying that these whales and these animals in the zoo should be subjected to a kind of discipline that a lot of people are not going to like.
Well, it's either that or you got a dead lady, you got one dead lady, and you got a kid that's going to be psycho. Okay? And that's my personal feeling. If you're going to have a whale and a lion, and they're going to kill, I say you have to use the electric cattle prod with reason, within reason. Use the technique of pain and aversion therapy within reason. Otherwise, if you don't, you're going to have a dead lady and a psycho kid.
And I don't think you should call the kid psycho. All right.
Well, he said he was traumatized.
And I know, but he's not psycho.
Well, that's the end result, though. The kid being traumatized by a whale, he just saw a lady or something, he'll turn into a psycho.
And well, we don't know that's the case, but what we are talking about here is the control of these animals by humans, and you say we've spent too much time trying to be nice to animals. And
exactly, yes, sir. And I think the time has come now where we have to reassert our control over the animal and say, hey, you know, I'm sorry about everything, you being in captivity. I mean, you're not going to talk to it because it's not going to understand you, but you do say, you know, guess what? I'm a human, you're an animal, and I'm not going to let you eat, you know, you can't eat people, and you're not going to turn some kid, some 10-year-old kid, into, like, Ted Bundy because he saw what you did.
You know? All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number. Do animals in captivity, wild animals, do we need to begin to exert more control over these creatures and stop with all the touchy-feely, stop with all of the animal rescue because they're killing human beings? And perhaps we need to get back to the days of using these electric prods and other devices. 877-876-PHIL, or maybe we ought to just stop with zoos altogether. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
I mean, a psycho, you know, but...
listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Not about the pound, you know.
Yeah, I don't think the pound, even though your analogy, I understand what your explanation was, that technically if a whale was found on county streets...
Yes, sir. Yeah, the county would have control over it, and the pound would have control over it. If they had a whale pound, you know, which I don't think anytime soon, but I mean...
All right, but Dave, we're with Dave Oliva. He's a prospective Los Angeles police officer. He's going to the L.A. Police Academy eventually after he graduates college. But I wanted to ask you just one question. We'll go to some phone calls. What you're essentially saying here is that the animals in captivity need to be controlled better.
Yes, sir. They need, obviously. But I want to go one step further and say this. I think we are endangering the lives of trainers and endangering the lives of a little kid like this little boy who's 10 years old. His family is suing.
And we're referring, by the way, not to interrupt, Dave, to a family suing SeaWorld because their son witnessed the death of this trainer, and they say the boy is traumatized. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Because that kid is going to grow up to, I don't know what will happen to him, you know, having seen that. So I think you have to be very specific, and you have to say to these, to the Humane Society, and we got to use, we got to do what we got to do. You know,
well, what does that mean, we got to do what we got to do?
We got to do what we got to do. When it comes to these animals, we got to do... If you got a lion and a lion gets out of the cage and you don't want to kill it because it's a rare lion, okay, what's the next step? You have to, like, beat on it, you know, and make it, you know...
But you're not going to... People are not going to like that.
Okay, well, then maybe they like a dead trainer and a kid that goes out and turns into Richard Ramirez. I don't know.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, Dave Oliva, as we talk about wild animals, wild animal parks, and what's the best way to control these creatures. Here is Catherine in Los Angeles. Catherine, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dave Oliva. Go ahead.
I feel that this guest that you've got on is out of his mind. These zoos and water parks for animals, they're only showing animals what they would do in their natural habitat. These are not pets. We do not have any control over them other than highlighting what behaviors they may show in the wild. You
well,
cannot
of course we have
expect...
control over them. Of course we have control over them. They are in an enclosed area that is supervised by humans, and the humans direct the activities of these animals so that when you show this animal to a little kid and the animal... You know, like eats or I don't know, didn't eat, or like he killed that lady. The kid
They are still wild animals. They are not domesticated animals. You cannot control them like you would control a cat or a dog. These animals are humongous.
I didn't say you're going to control them like a cat or a dog. I said you keep them from, you know, thinking that they're, like, running the show. That's all.
Well, guess what? They are, in a respect, they are running the show.
No, yes. They're not. No.
Human,
no, they're not.
Human,
you can beat on that animal. You got to beat on it.
No, wait. Catherine is making the point. What are you going to do? You're going to beat on that animal until it does what?
Until it doesn't kill. I mean, God. You want it to go and kill a lady because you want it to be, like,
well, guess what?
When
I'm sorry, but there are, you cannot expect that these animals are going to be domesticated and they're not going to kill. Their instinct is to survive. So if they feel threatened,
they
will
when they
kill.
Get into
that
the zoo,
is what their instinct is.
Yeah,
that
when
is
they get
what
into
these
the zoo,
places
then you tell
show.
Them, yeah, but if you take an animal like that, you put it in a zoo, and you basically say to it, okay, the fun's over. You know, this is, I'm a human. You know, I'm not saying that it's going to roll over and fetch a newspaper.
Okay, you know, the only way you're going to have those animals be, you know, to have humans safe from those animals is, fine, you take out all their teeth, you take out you declaw them, you put them, you know, if they're a water animal, you put them on dry land. Well, guess what? Now you have changed the nature of that animal. And when you go to a zoo or you go to a water park with animals, now you have changed the natural behavior of those animals.
I don't want to take the teeth out. You take the teeth out, you're going to, you know, what, gum a guy? Or, I'm not saying, you know, let's have the teeth out so they're going to gum on a man. I'm saying what you have to do is tell the animal, you know, the fun's over. You're not,
How are
ma'am,
you? How are
that
you
little,
how
ma'am, with that little
how
boy
you,
saw, with that little that little boy saw that animal,
animal,
and that little boy is going to turn into, he's going to go out and like become a psycho.
All right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Dave Oliva.
Phil Hendry.
It's going to be like, oh, Ian Brady.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Should parents friend their kids on Facebook? Next hour, Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley talk with us about that here on the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. With me is Dave Oliva, a student at L.A. Canyon College in criminal justice and law enforcement, with plans to be a member of the Los Angeles Police Department eventually when he gets through the LAPD Police Academy. And we're talking about the SeaWorld death of that young woman, the trainer, in February. A lawsuit has been filed by the Connell family, Suzanne and Todd, who were there with their 10-year-old son, and they have filed a lawsuit seeking damages. Coming a day after a federal job safety agency fined SeaWorld $75,000 for three violations they uncovered during the investigation into Don Branchow's death. But they are accusing SeaWorld of having traumatized their son with this, the death of this lady. Now, before we get to some more phone calls, 877-876-PHIL, I want to talk to Dave here about the idea, when you say that these animals need to be controlled and these animals need to be, even at even risking the wrath of the, if you say, the Humane Society and PETA, you haven't been very specific, but you have said beat them down.
Well, I, you know, and I think some people heard that and they, you know, are now, you know, saying that Dave Oliva wants, you know, to be cruel to animals. I don't want to be cruel to animals, but I don't want to be cruel to people. And I think... that's very important. I mean, you have a 10-year-old boy who has been traumatized. That trauma that goes into him, into his mind, you know, from what he saw of that lady. And I don't know if you read the specific of what happened to that lady. I'm not going to get into it, you know, but it was very horrible. And so, and the animal, you know, the Shamu or whatever it's called.
I think the animal's name was Tilikium, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but... that animal thought he was just playing with that lady, but he didn't play. He wasn't playing, you know. And that little boy saw that, and that trauma goes into his brain and twists his mind, you know, till it comes out Ted Bundy, you know. And
well, let's stop speculating on the future of this little boy and whether he's going to be Ted Bundy. You've referenced psycho and
well, I think we're dealing with something that serious, Mr. Hendry. You know,
well, I don't know whether this child is going to be traumatized to the point of becoming a mass murderer, but I will agree with you. It's a very traumatic thing for a kid to see. But what you're saying is, rather than expect a wild animal to be a wild animal, if it were up to me, for instance, Dave, I'd say no more wild animal parks.
Well, you know, I've heard that kind of talk, Mr. Henry. I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, we're going to stop being human beings. We're going to stop. What are we supposed to do on a weekend? You know, there are a lot of us don't want to go to Disneyland because I don't personally think Disneyland is all that masculine to go to. You know, I'd like something that is more masculine of an entertainment. And I do feel a wild animal park and a zoo and everything. But you have to tell the animal, basically, and do it any way you want to do it. But you got to look at that animal. The animal looks to you. And you have to say, you know, this is my show now. Okay, we was in the jungle, but the jungle we're not in no more. You know, now we're here. And so now this is my show, you know. And if the animal, you know, plays ball, okay, you give it fish or squid or whatever it eats. And if it don't play ball, then, you know, all bets are off, you know. And, I mean, even if you have to, you know, forgive me for saying this in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, but even if you have to shoot it and kill it, you know. And
you'd shoot and kill that whale.
I think I don't even know why that whale's still alive, yeah.
You would have shot and killed that whale, the whale that killed that lady.
That's a no-brainer. It committed a killing, and last time I looked, that's a death. You know, that's a death sentence. You know.
Yeah. All right, 877-876-PHIL. I never thought I understand humans, but animals. 877-876-PHIL. Terry in Fresno, you're on the Phil Hendry Show, listening to us on KJZN with Dave Oliva. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I have four horses and lots of dogs, and I'm here to tell you that they are unpredictable animals, And as far as controlling them, the best I can do is demand their respect and count on that I can bluff them, because those great big 900-pound animals that I push around and ask to lead where I want and stop when I want, they think that I have the control. I'm bluffing. But
exactly.
There are all situations.
You do have the control. You do have the control.
I have to insist upon respect. Yes, I do, and I make sure I do, because they don't take one step. They don't walk backwards. They don't walk forwards. And if I let them go one little bit, then they will push that. And they do think when they're playing sometimes and kicking up and running past me in the pasture that it's all in fun. But if I'm too close and I haven't gotten my peripheral vision working, I could get kicked in the head and killed. So you have to realize that even this horse that I race from, a baby that I love and brush his mane and tail and all that stuff, he can kill me just for the sake of, because he's an animal.
I suggest to you that you need to have someone else there to control the animal because that's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Like if you have your dog out in public, right, and the dog bites somebody, are you going to say to that person, oh wow, you know that stuff happens, man. My dog bit you.
Yes.
That person didn't want your dog to bite him. That person's walking down the street. He didn't ask to be hit by your dog. You know. And I would
like to say to you,
I'm going to shoot your dog, you know. I'm sorry,
Well, let's not be talking about...
No, but if her dog bites me and I didn't even do nothing, I would
kill
it.
I have a sign on my front. I have a sign on my front gate that says, hell yes, my dog bites. It's not beware of dog. It's not
I'm
dog
talking about
dog
like out in public. Out in public.
Well, I'm
like if you got your dog out in public.
Animals are unpredictable.
Hey, really? Well, guess what? If my dog bites your kid, I'm going to say animals are unpredictable and tough stuff. I don't think so. I don't think you'd take that. I wouldn't
it's
take it.
It's about controlling them and not letting kids around them.
I would be. Oh, so I'm supposed to restrict the movements of my family because you're outside with your dog. You're out on the street with your dog. Is that it?
I won't take my dog in a situation where I can't control it and he'll stay here around. He doesn't know to go in a crowd.
You understand? You understand that I would kick the dog.
Well, now hold on for a minute, man.
Why can't I kick a dog if it bites me? See, so
well,
I'm
you
saying
should. You gotta defend yourself.
Yeah,
I'm saying
the whale. If the whale is like not doing what you want it to do, you gotta do what you gotta do. That lady's dead because they didn't do what they gotta do.
That's right.
Do what they gotta do. All right,
no,
Terry.
No, no.
I understand. You got animals are unpredictable, but I'm not sure that. So are you telling me, are you agreeing with that lady? Or
no, I'm not agreeing with that lady. I don't agree with anybody that says, hey, man, you know, animals are like, wow, you know, you never know what they're going to do. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Henry, I don't agree with that. I know exactly what an animal's going to do, and if it does something that I don't want it to do, then I'm going to do what I got to do, is what I'm saying.
Well, you're saying you would have shot that whale, kicked that dog, and...
That's right. You know, I hate to say it. Otherwise, you got a little... Like a 10-year-old kid that is going to go out in the world after seeing what he saw, and his mind is jacked up, you know? Like, I know you don't want me to say Richard Ramirez, but if you've seen, what do you call it, Halloween?
I don't want to talk about Halloween, man. I don't know what that movie is based in nothing. It's fiction. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Red in Fresno, listening on KJZN. Red, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
I just want to know where he got his professional animal training or animal husbandry. He's talking like he knows what he's talking
about. Animal husbandry?
Now, let me ask you a question. You're taking a wild animal that is in a controlled situation.
Right.
You're talking about a dog out in public. Anybody with any common sense knows that there's a huge-ass difference. What's this deal about a whale on the street and beat him down and do what you got to do?
If an animal is a wild animal and it's killing people, you got to beat it down until it does what you want to do, until you do what you got to do.
Well,
yes, sir.
I tell you what,
don't you
walk
think
into
so?
A pen with a horse and you start beating them down, you're going to end up a soccer ball. And then I'm supposed to go back
man,
to
are you kidding me? Well, you think a horse is
you
like Superman
of that?
Or something?
You ever heard of that? Knowledge, dangerous. Let me ask you.
What you got to do with a horse is you got to tie it to a fence.
Let me ask you, how much professional training do you have? What professional training do you have with animals?
What professional training do I have with animals?
Yeah.
I went. You don't need none.
I said professional.
You don't need none. You don't need no training. So no, you don't. All you need to do...
You need to be a cop.
Well, you need a lot of that.
You need to be a cop. Listen,
you need to go to the police academy.
Shoot him. Listen, he's
doing
something.
You need to go to the police academy. But see, you're treating the horse like it's Superman, and it's not Superman. It's an animal, okay? It's not
Superman. Let me ask you
a question.
Superman. This
guy's, God, man.
This guy's,
you would ask me questions, man. Let me ask you,
wait,
what professional training do you have?
I'm asking you a question.
What do you know about
the pound? I'm asking you a question.
You don't know anything about the pound. Okay.
You see a guy walking across the street, jaywalking. Well, he's
right.
Smarter than an animal. He should know better. So let's run over there and beat him down.
No, I would give him a ticket.
Oh, great. I think they called that Rodney King.
No, I said I give him a ticket. They didn't give Rodney King
a
ticket.
Well, humans are more intelligent, so if they do something wrong, they ought to get more damage, right? Because they can think.
No, not at all.
Well,
no,
go beat them down. They got to do.
No, that's not an animal. See, an animal you can beat down.
What year are you in community college? What year are you in community college?
Human beings are not. Human beings are
what
not animals.
Year?
Okay.
And you
human beings,
that
therefore,
a little bit of knowledge
human
is dangerous.
Beings, yeah, I think you already said that. Human beings are intelligent, and so therefore you can talk to them. An animal you can't talk to unless you can, which I don't know.
Well, that
an animal you have to beat.
Ignorance.
You got to beat it down. But
that
if you find a whale on the street, if you find a whale on the street, who are you going to call? You call a pound.
Well,
if you find a whale on the street,
you would call a pound if you found a whale on the street. But that's not.
Well, if I found a whale on the street, I quit doing the drugs I was doing.
Well, maybe now's a good time to stop them anyway.
That's the stupidest example I've ever heard in my life.
If you find a whale on the street, who would you call? You do call a pound, technically, even though they don't.
I'd call rehab because I need to get in the hospital.
What? What are you talking about?
I'd call rehab because I'm doing some serious drugs if I found a whale on the street.
Well, you think a horse is Superman. You should already call rehab, man.
Well,
you know, it's going to kick my ass or something. I mean, first off, all right, a tiger, a whale, I get it. A horse is like Tonka or something. You know, it's like a flicker.
Where do you get the knowledge to be able to...
What are we talking about here?
All I'm saying, Mr. Henry, is this guy thinks a horse is like Spider-Man.
No, he doesn't.
He said a horse is all... You can't control it.
All right. The gentleman here, I think, is saying that a wild animal is an uncontrollable, unpredictable...
No, it's not, man. No, it isn't. No, it's not. If you put it in in the right environment and you tell it that I got to do what I got to do, if you do what you do, who's stronger? Who's stronger, a human or an animal? Who's stronger?
Who's
stronger, a human or an animal? A human.
Well, it depends
on what. Because are you crazy, man? We got, like, cars, A-bombs. We got cars. Do you think a horse has a chance against a man? No. Okay, so that's what we say to the horse. I got to do what I got to do.
All right. You're going to do what you got to do.
That's right. And this guy's going to stand there and go, oh, no, a horse, it's smarter than me. I better run.
You know what? Here's a simple saying that I learned growing up.
Here comes a horse.
Just
I know what it is. A little bit of knowledge goes a long way, right?
No.
Oh.
You get hurt by an animal, it is always your fault. If for no other reason, you were there. You
stupid,
walk
man.
In, you take a risk.
That's stupid.
Every
That's the
time
dumbest thing
you
I ever heard in my life, man. That's the dumbest thing I ever heard in my life, man.
Well, beat him down for some
thing.
Rookie in community college. It's not even a police officer.
All right.
You know, here's the thing, man. A horse, it doesn't know how to shoot a gun, but a man does. Oh! There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
What happened to the caller? Yeah, all right, thank you. 877-876, that was a big, whole lot of nothing.
No, but I made the point. A horse?
A horse can't shoot a gun, a man can. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. So essentially, people are saying to you, Dave, that people better be expecting when they take their children to the zoo or when they take their children to SeaWorld, they should expect that their kids are going to see something horrible.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
That's what you hear?
That's what I hear.
I don't think that that's the case. I think what they're saying is they have a...
No, that's exactly what people are saying. They're saying, hey, you know, you can't tame an animal. So that means that when I take my kid to the zoo, I take my kid to SeaWorld, and my kid sees, like, a human being get their head, like, eaten off of the neck, you know.
What do you mean, eat it off of the neck?
I don't know what happened to that lady.
She got drowned, basically, and serious traumatic injury, internal injury.
All right, I mean, so you're telling me, and the people...
I'm not telling you anything.
All right, well, the people are saying, yeah, that's right, that's what you should expect. And I'm saying to the people, okay, great, take your kid to SeaWorld, he'll get traumatized when he sees, like, someone get eaten or drowned, and then the kid goes out and turns into Edwin Kemper with a head, like, in his icebox. I mean, it's ridiculous.
You keep trying to draw this analogy between a kid that's traumatized seeing an animal accident or an animal training accident and serial murderers, and I don't know that you can do that. 877, you're going to be a law. You're going to be a cop. You know,
I'm telling you, a lot of those serial murderers were traumatized. Yeah, by I don't know what they saw, but they saw something.
877-876-PHIL. You can use tranquilizer guns. Here are the traditional things. Tranquilizer guns.
Right. Well, a tranquilizer gun is only good insofar as it's going to knock the animal out, but you're going to need a whole lot more than that if you're going to keep the animal from clawing some guy's head off.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Dave Oliva with us, who believes that the reason why we have these accidents at zoos, at SeaWorld and elsewhere, is because they simply do not have control over the animals, and that there's too much touchy-feely PETA and humane society stuff going on. Here is Cal in Louisville, Kentucky. Cal, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Okay, anytime you take your kids or anybody else to go see any kind of a wild animal show, whether it be a SeaWorld or whether it be any kind of a circus or anything like that, you know darn well the risks going in. You don't expect to see any kind of a death, but these are wild animals here. There is no such thing as a wild animal.
Why would you put your kid
totally
through that?
Dominated.
Say again? What do you put your kid through that for? Why would you put your kid through that?
Because the odds of that happening are slim to none. Your chances
are
actually better having
that. Wait a minute, man. I thought you said that animals are unpredictable. How do you know the chances are slim to none?
I think he can say that based upon what we know and what we have seen and what likelihood there is of these things occurring.
Well, I mean, people are telling me that animals are so unpredictable, you don't know when one's going to go and, like, kick your head in or something like that. So, okay.
I mean... Okay, and number one, I would like to know exactly how traumatized this kid is, because if the person was pulled underneath the water, what exactly did the kid see? How well can you see under the water from bleachers? Have you ever been to SeaWorld?
So you're
kind of hard to see under the water.
Sue? You're saying they shouldn't sue? I mean, their kid, like, saw what you say everybody should expect to see, right? So now you're saying
it's about the same
difference get the
suit. Seeing a NASCAR show. You're there to see the
race,
but you know there's a possibility that you're going to see an accident. It's the same thing.
Okay, and so
now, somebody
they shouldn't sue because the kid,
race,
the kid's seen it.
Do you think you have the right to sue because you've seen an accident? You knew darn well that it was not a chance that there was going to be an accident. The same thing
you
take a kid to see wild animals.
Why would you take a little tiny kid to go see a lion claw a guy's face off?
That's not why you take the kids to...
And they want to see the real thing. Why wouldn't you take your kid, especially on a birthday or something like that? The odds of that happening
is slim to
none.
They see it on what do they see on TV? They see a guy get his face clawed off. I ain't seen that.
No, I don't know about your kids, but mine don't. No.
Well, but you're going to take them to the zoo to see it.
Yeah, because every time I take my kid to the zoo, somebody gets killed, right?
Wait, you just said that happens, and you should expect it, and they have no right to sue. See how my logic is like
backing you up a little bit. No,
I'm backing you up
word.
Here, man. No, I'm backing
you
up because I'm twisting your words.
What do you mean you're backing him up?
He's got no room to move because I've got my logic has got him.
What do you mean your logic's
logic.
Got him?
Yeah,
your
I'm
logic.
Saying if you care about your kids, why do you take them someplace where you know what I'm saying? Where an animal's gonna like rip a guy's head off?
He's saying that it rarely happens. You should expect it to happen.
Yeah. With your kids there? God, man. I think people think... What's he laughing about? He's saying...
I'm laughing because I'm thinking of all the millions of people that's probably laughing at you right now.
I don't care. I'm asking you. You took your kids to something you know an animal's going to rip some guy's face off. And you took your kids to that.
No, no. You don't
The odds are that it's not going to happen.
The chances are that it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You probably got a 99.99% chance that won't happen. But there is always that risk, and everybody knows darn well that risk is there.
Okay,
and
let's to
sue somebody
what do you say
that
to your
is
kid?
Just ridiculous.
Well, okay, well, let's say it happens. What do you say to your kid when the kid's all, like, turning into Ted Bundy?
Number one,
what
I
do you
don't
say?
Care what my kid sees. He's not going to grow up
oh, you
Ted
don't?
Bundy. I'm going to sit
you
my
don't?
Kid down
you don't
like
care
an adult,
what he sees?
And like an adult, I'm going to explain to my kid what happened.
Like an adult? What if he's nine,
and
man? You're sitting down like an adult if he's nine?
Say again?
Help him cope it. What if he's nine? You're going to sit him down like an adult?
No, he's the adult.
Your kid's going to turn out to be like Edward Kemper, man. Forget it. Somebody's going to hear a pounding on the ceiling and it's some guy's head falling off the sofa.
877-876-PHIL-HENDRY. Phil Hendry Show.
As we planned, we have removed this extra skin.
The tragic events that occurred this week, especially the barbarism committed with the homicide of
When I went to school, we studied the Constitution.
When you're looking at this kind of event, there'll be a laser-focused media.
Telling people that a nuclear baby is coming.
Now, isn't that lovely?
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, with a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Nothing else. Truth is our bitch. And right on through the looking glass, right on through the other side of talk radio we go, radio, media, all of it, here on the groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show. Our website, philhendryshow.com, the right arm of the Phil Hendry Show. You cannot listen to this show without having a BSP and watching our live streaming video every night with live streaming audio, getting the downloads of our shows, the podcasts each and every day, the Classic Phil podcasts, our archives, our comments section, our news feed, everything, and more to come at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. Should parents friend their kids on Facebook? Bobby Dooley is going to join us this hour, plus still to come, an appeals court okays warrantless GPS tracking. 877-876-PHIL, the 20th year of our radio show. To friend or not to friend is the big question facing many, many parents dealing with teenagers on Facebook. Three-quarters of parents questioned in a Nielsen survey said they are friends with their children on the popular social networking website, which boasts 500 million active users. Man, that's a lot of people. But a third admitted they're worried that they are not seeing everything their children are doing on the web, perhaps with good reason. Nearly 30% of all kids said if given the choice, they would unfriend their parents. The number one parenting issue, at least with my discussion with parents, is living on Facebook, said Regina Lewis, who's a consumer advisor with online service company AOL, which recently developed the survey that we're talking about. It is part of the modern-day parenting reality, she said. Bobby and Steve Dooley are parents. They are presidents of the Western Estate Parent Teacher Organization. And, Bobby, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Phil. Thank you.
So you are on Facebook.
Yeah.
Is your husband?
Yeah, Steve and I both have accounts on Facebook.
Are your kids your friends?
Yes, they are.
And how many kids do you have?
We have three sons. Seth, Dylan, and Justin, and...
But they want to be our friends.
They want to be our friends. In fact, they friend requested us. We were not even going to bother them with it. We got on Facebook originally, to have a way of communicating with and talking to other homeowners in our homeowners association. It was another way of pulling our community together.
Mm-hmm.
And we found gradually that it was more interesting to talk to the younger kids. It was not quite as interesting to talk to people who lived in the community. I had been in a homeowners association meeting, and I had suggested to the parents that were there, or the adults that were there, the homeowners that were there, that everyone get a Facebook account so that we could stay in touch. And You might want to say, Steve, that you put up a Western States account.
Yeah, I got a Western States Homeowners Association account and a Green Center, too.
I didn't quite hear that.
He said Steve got a Homeowners Association page.
Okay. So there was a Homeowners Association page for people at Western Estates.
That is correct. Now, what happened was that we would send out these notices, and we would talk about whose home was being leaned, for instance, because they had violated a CC&R. Or we talked about different issues having to do with the use of the community center. And we found that it was more interesting. More and more we were getting friend requests from our son's friends at school because they knew who we were. And for some reason, I don't know, Steve, it surprised you too. The kids were just more comfortable talking to us.
Well, now, you're talking about something more than just your own sons here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're talking about the friends.
These are friends of our son.
You're talking.
Excuse me.
You're talking about your friends.
No, our son's friends.
Your son's friends, and your son's friends, and people like that were friending you. So gradually, your accounts on Facebook were no longer about Western Estates. What would you say they were about?
Well, I would say they were about the kids were coming to us because they needed an adult to talk to.
What about their own parents?
That is the really interesting part of this. Their own parents did not seem to be people they could talk to, for whatever reason.
Yeah, they weren't comfortable talking to them. They talked to somebody at school and everything.
And well, the kids seemed to think that we were easier to talk to.
Did the kids know you?
Well, they knew us because a lot of the kids had been over to the house. But I have over 4,000 friends on Facebook, which is kind of unusual. I don't know if you're aware of Facebook, but it's unusual to have 4,000 friends.
You're very popular if you do.
Well, I don't have 4,000. I've got over 3,000 friends, but...
Well, you're in the media, and...
Yeah.
But for just a homeowner like myself, to have over 4,000 friends, it's almost unheard of. And I suspect that many of those are the kids. They like to come over to my page. They can hang out there. They can talk about the things they're interested in.
What is your Facebook friend page like that makes it different from some of the parents that the kids don't want to be friends with, some of their own parents? Do you post just interesting things? Do you put up interesting news articles?
Steve, what would you say it is?
I don't know. Not really. Just that, you know.
A lot of times I'll just say, I'm home. What's new? And the kids just jump right in as if they've been waiting for me to. A lot of them call me mom, you know. And, of course, I'm not their mother, and I tell them that, you know, in a perfect world, maybe I would be your mother, but I'm not. But you can certainly, I appreciate that. But they'll say, what's up, Mom, you know? And I'll say, well, what's going on? And then the next thing you know, we've got anywhere, Steve, what do you think, 50, 60, 70 comments. The kids just going back and forth talking to each other. It's gratifying.
What do you say to parents, then, who want to friend their own kids, and their kids don't want to be their friends? Instead, the kids friend you. What do you say to them?
It's really sad. You know, it's really sad.
Yeah, it's really sad because the kids, I don't know.
To me, it bespeaks, Phil, a lack of communication, I guess, that a lot of parents are not contemporary. I know I was on your program back in July talking about the success of my Facebook page that I do have. But you don't really, it's not really a success. I mean, we don't make money on it. But it does tell me that my reach for my opinions, my feelings, the things that I do for people.
Well, Bobby is the homeowner's president. You know?
I was going to say, being a homeowners association president and also being the parent-teacher organization president, you have a very... A significant amount of influence with parents as well as kids. So what do you say to, do you ever have these parents talking to you about their kids? And let me give our phone number out here, if I could.
Sometimes I do, Phil.
Yeah, let me give our phone number. It's 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Should parents friend their kids on Facebook? We have Bobby and Steve Dooley on talking about the fact that they do friend their own sons, although your sons asked you.
It's called being friend requested, and I was friend requested by my own sons. And I think it's really sad if a parent is waiting to be friend requested by their own kids. If I was advising them, I would say don't wait. Go ahead and friend request your own children. I don't know that there's a lot of parents like Steve and I where the kids are going to friend request us.
Well, what's the difference between you and other parents, you know?
I just think we're more accessible, we're more fun. The kids have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I got my Facebook page. I'll say, hey, you know, what's up? And I'll have pictures of, like, my car. You know,
Steve puts up pictures of himself washing and waxing his Camaro. He's got a 5-speed. What is it, Steve? I don't even know anything about it.
I got a 5-speed Camaro. I got a 5-speed 88. Yeah, it's pretty
nice. So you have those pictures, right?
Yeah, I got pictures of them.
All right, well, then you have pictures of yourself washing your 5-speed Camaro. Bobby, what do you put on your page?
Well, like I said, it isn't much. I'll just say, hi, Mom's home. You know, what are you doing tonight? You know, I just saw an article about something. And generally, my instinct is really good. And the kids, next thing you know, I've got 70, 80 comments. Mom, you know, I think this, Mom, that. A lot of times the kids will argue with each other about, you know, whether Mom's right or not.
So the kids are calling you Mom, and these are kids that are not your own.
No, they're just teenagers who are really hungry, Phil, for parents to, to be cooler. You know?
Yeah, that's really it. Parents, cool enough.
Well, hold on. You're a little loud there, okay?
Back up.
877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley on the line with us talking about Facebook and why more parents are, whether or not parents should friend their kids on Facebook. Now, that's another question. You have a lot of kids that friend you, Ms. Dooley. They're the friends. They're the kids of friends of yours. Do you ever get the parents saying something to you about that?
Yeah, a lot of times you'll have a parent say, I understand that Jennifer is a friend of yours on Facebook. I'll say, yeah. And they'll say, at first they will say, I'd appreciate it if you would unfriend her because I'm not comfortable with that. But once you explain to them that the child is more comfortable talking to me and to Steve.
Yeah, but just my Camaro and everything.
Because the boys will relate to Steve because of his Camaro. Once I explain that to them, then they recognize that, you know, I'm making a really good point.
So you talk these parents, the parents will say to you, I don't like the idea of my kid being your friend.
A lot of times they will.
Yeah, they're all nervous and everything.
But once you sit them down and you explain to them, no, the fact is your daughter or your son, they're far more comfortable talking to me, and here's why. And you give them ideas on how they have, their children are, I don't know, embarrassed by them, or one girl's mother is overweight, and I'm not. I keep myself in shape. That probably has a lot to do with it, Phil. I mean, Steve and I do look a lot younger than, you know, I'm almost 40. Steve's in his early 40s, but we both look like we're in our late 20s, early 30s, and I think the kids feel very comfortable that we have great physical images. A lot of these girls have mothers that are terribly, terribly overweight. Their fathers are, I don't know, fathers are very slovenly looking. And I say that, Phil, with great love. So I tell them, you know, you're embarrassing your daughter by the way you look. If you sit down with these parents for about a half an hour and really tell them the truth.
Boy, I don't know. I mean,
what?
Well, that would, I got to tell you, that would make me angry.
What would make you angry? The fact that I'm being honest?
No, but I mean, if I was a mother and I'm over, you say, well, you know, you're fat.
I never say fat, Phil. I say to them, you are very critically overweight.
Well, critically overweight. And your kid wants to be my friend because I look good, you know.
The children want the truth, and I think the parents need the truth, Phil.
And the parents want the truth, too.
And if I say to a parent that you are profoundly disturbingly overweight. It is the truth, and it's something they can act on.
I don't know. That would... Bobby and Steve Dooley with us. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Should parents friend their kids on Facebook? Well, a lot of kids don't want to be friends with their parents, but this is one woman and her husband that the kids do want to friend. Bobby and Steve Dooley, and their sons like being their friends. And the kids just like talking to them because, for one thing, they both look a lot younger than they are. And Ms. Dooley's even advised some of the parents, you know, you're disturbingly overweight. Maybe that's why your daughter doesn't want to be your friend. 877-876-PHIL. That would piss me off, man. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, don't worry about it.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Bobby and Steve Dooley, the Western Estates Homeowners Association and Parent Teacher Organization. Bobby, you're friends with your kids on Facebook, and your kids friended you.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of distinct. Is that right?
I think it's distinct. Yeah, I think when your own kids ask to be your friend on Facebook, I think you've got it's a little different from a lot of these parents that are chasing after the kids on Facebook. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of kids don't want to be. They would rather be friends with Steve and I because we don't chase after them. We give them advice that I was talking to a girl. We had a comment going today. There were about, 90 or 100 kids checked in about texting. And they said, my parents don't want me to text because it's expensive, and my parents don't want me to text because the bill is this. And I said, well, you know that's really a lie because you can get unlimited texting. So it's difficult for me to say to you that your parents are liars. But shouldn't I be honest with you? And they'll say, yes, Mom, you should.
And they're calling you Mom.
That's the kid's nickname for me, yeah.
And but don't you feel, and we'll get some people to, I'd like people to give me some feedback on this at 877-876-PHIL. Don't you feel don't you feel you're intruding?
In what way?
When a kid says, my parents don't want me texting because of the bill, shouldn't you say, you know what, you should do what your parents want you to do?
And I do say that, Phil.
No, you said that you tell the kids your parents are lying, you know.
Well, the parents are lying because you get unlimited texting.
Yeah, you can get unlimited texting, so it is a lie. But I feel I don't tell them, don't do what your parents... One girl was talking about abortion. Her parents are very Christian. I said, you know, it is a choice. But I didn't say you should have the abortion. I said it is a choice.
Boy, oh boy. Do you know these people?
Phil, I don't know what you mean by boy, oh boy. What we're doing, we're just a couple of kids, too.
No, you're not. You're adults.
Well, of course we're adults.
But, I mean, you're not... What do you mean you're a couple of kids?
We are... pretending that we're kids. We don't want to put the kids off. I've got over 4,000 friends, and I don't want to jeopardize that by acting like a lamer, you know?
Yeah. Or a noob or something like that.
Or a noob.
All right, or a noob. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Virginia in Boston. Virginia, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yeah. The more and more mm-hmm. I listen... the more mm-hmm. and more I get a bit creeped out. Okay, mm-hmm. I have teenage daughters, mm-hmm. and I have a really good relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I'm friends mm-hmm. with my mm-hmm. daughter on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. On textbook? What did you say?
On Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a lot of abused mm-hmm. kids, maybe, because they can't talk to their parents because they're abused by their parents?
I think so. I think we do. I think we get a lot of kids who are told, you know, you're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to do that. It's always no, no, no.
You know. Well, is that abuse?
I'm sorry?
Well, is that abuse, or are these just kids that are, you know, they've got strict parents?
Well, I don't know what you mean by strict. I mean, the kids are lied to. They're told they can't text, and they're told that it's the bill.
Okay, but let's get into what you said.
That's a bald-faced lie.
Can I get into what you said about...
Mm-hmm.
Can I get into what
Wait
you
a minute.
Said
that's
about...
That's not a bold-faced lie. Some of the people don't have these plans.
No, but they should have the plan.
All right. I'm sorry, Virginia. Go ahead.
That's okay. The comment you made on helping somebody talk about an abortion, like, that's really not your place. And that's what kind of creeped me out. That's not your place. Unless the parent is abusive.
You know,
I asked the caller to, you're a little close to the phone.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You know, I didn't really give her, and I didn't say do this or do that. She said, you know, she messaged me.
Wait a minute. I got to interrupt here.
No, Phil, can I finish what I'm saying, please?
No, I got to interrupt. These are underage kids now messaging you?
Excuse me, but I'm not running some...
I'm not turning them out.
Yeah, we're not turning these girls out.
I didn't say that you were, but what do you mean?
The girl said that she and her boyfriend got into trouble. And I said, well, you know, I believe in choice.
In other words, the girl is going to have a choice. Now, maybe her parents believe that the abortion is out of the question.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, I would disagree with that.
But that's what I'm saying. I think that's what the caller's saying. That's not your place. Did you call the parents?
Who?
Of the girl that said her and her boyfriend were thinking of an abortion.
So I have over 4,000 friends.
I know you've got over 4,000 friends on Facebook, but are you worried about jeopardizing that? We'll be right back. Thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL, Bobby and Steve Dooley.
Phil Hendry.
I have over 4,000 friends on Facebook.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And we're back with Bobby and Steve Dooley from the Western Estates Parent-Teacher Organization. We're talking about the article in Reuters today, very interesting article. Should parents friend their kids on Facebook? Should parents and kids be friends on Facebook? Ms. Dooley, you and your husband both have Facebook pages where you are friends with your sons. You say your son's friend requested you, and the difference being what?
The difference is that our sons wanted to be friends with us.
Yeah, but well, those parents don't want to be.
And a lot of these parents don't. The kids don't want to be friends with their parents.
Well, let me get back to the issue, what I was talking to you about. And then we'll take some phone calls, because I find this to be, and I have to imagine that this is a very tough area for you. When you have the kids talking to you on your Facebook page, and they're talking to you about sex, they're talking to you about abortions, like the case of this one girl, and you say, we believe in choice, don't you feel as if you are involving or butting in to issues that are not your business?
No, we don't.
Well, explain why.
Because, you know what, Phil, I'll give you two words, freedom of speech, or three words, I guess.
Yeah, three words.
Freedom of speech. I have the right, through the freedom of speech, to say how I feel.
But you're a responsible adult, you know.
Of course I am. But I don't want to give them something that they get from their parents, which are lies and deceit.
You don't know whether these kids are getting lies and deceit.
Well, when you tell a kid that the texting bill is out of control and you could get unlimited texting... If you had the intelligence and the energy, you know...
Just looking at on the bill, the government...
Yeah, they have all the stuff. I think that's dishonest.
So now it comes down to an issue of the parents are not only dishonest, they don't have intelligence and energy enough to get a texting, to get an unlimited...
It's called unlimited texting, so see, even you are...
I know what it is, unlimited texting.
Yeah.
So now they're stupid, and they're dishonest... And you have freedom of speech, and that's where you get off telling a kid who is thinking of having an abortion, well, you believe it's choice.
I say that, Bill, I told you I've talked to a lot of these parents, and I'll say to them, you know, your daughter is a friend of mine. And they'll say, yes, I friend requested her, and she turned me down. And I will say to a lot of these mothers, I'll say, I think it's something as very, very simple as you getting serious about your body, and take some pride in yourself, and take a good long look at yourself in a mirror, what do you need to change? How much time do you have to put aside in the next year to get down to a reasonable weight? Your daughter's embarrassed being seen with you. And I really lay it out, and I give them step by step how they've driven their daughter away with the way they look. And these parents, I'm telling you, Phil, it is, I feel gratified. They will say thank you.
Yeah, they shake hands. It's a big misunderstanding.
And we really, it's just been a big misunderstanding, exactly.
Like I said, man, that would, as this parent here, that would really set me off. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Steve in New York. Steve, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bobby and Steve Dooley. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think that they're giving out the right information to the kids right now. First of all, I don't think I don't think you're trained psychologist. Are you guys trained? Are you a psychologist? Or anything like
am
that?
Am I a trained psychologist? No.
Are you a psychologist? So why are you
I'm on a Facebook.
First of all, parents.
Because it's my opinion.
First of all, parents should be friends with their kids at home instead of online. First of all, they should be friends at home. They don't need to find a friend in you. You sound like a devil's advocate. You're going against what the parents are really telling their children. You're telling the children that the parents are lying. I don't think that's right, and I think that you should kind of reevaluate the way that you are giving out suggestions to the youth today. Because
well,
the youth
I don't
are
give
really
out suggestions. I
proper guidance. And you're not giving them proper guidance.
Well, I'm not really trying to give them guidance. I'm just saying, if it were me, you know, if it were me.
I don't understand. You know, it sounds like you got kids. Do you have kids?
Yes, I have three sons.
Well, would you give your kids the same advice that you're giving kids online? Would you give them kids the same advice?
No.
See, you wouldn't. See, that's what I'm saying. So why would you give someone
Wait, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Well, because...
You wouldn't give your own kids the same advice that you're giving the kids online.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Why wouldn't you give your sons the same advice?
Well, I mean, Facebook is for fun.
You're playing the devil's advocate. See, you're being the devil's advocate. You're like a devil in sheep. You're like a devil in sheep's clothes.
No.
You're trying to be
good on one
side, but telling the kids the wrong information on the other side. If you ain't got nothing really good to tell your kids or the kids out there, you should leave it alone, really.
Well, no, I told Mr. Hendry, I don't know how many, are you on Facebook, sir, or do you have friends on Facebook?
I'm in a community that has a lot of young kids who need positive and good information. You know what I'm saying? They don't need to be misled no more than they are being misled now.
Right.
As it is.
I want to ask a question here. I want to ask a question. Why don't you give your sons the same advice as this gentleman said to the other kids?
Because, Phil, I've got, as I mentioned to you, I have over 4,000 friends on Facebook.
I don't care.
That's a lot.
You said you're just a friend. A friend doesn't be anybody. A friend and associate are two different people. You sound more or less like an associate than a friend. But you're giving out false information. And I don't think you should be doing it unless you are really qualified and you're certified to give out information like that. You're no psychologist. You're no therapist.
No, I'm not. I know that I'm not a psychologist.
Why are you giving the false information to the youth? To lead them astray even more than they are now.
It's an entertainment product. It's satire.
What do you mean it's satire? No, it isn't satire. You're saying...
Well, what I mean is I have a lot of friends on Facebook, so I want to keep the friend level.
So you're going to give out information that could harm a kid just so you keep your friends at 4,000 people?
So it sounds like you need more friends than anybody. You sound like you don't.
No.
You sound like
I
you
think
can
you
go
gentlemen
over and then develop some good positive insight from some real people.
I think you gentlemen have twisted this. I did not say that.
I don't understand.
You did say. You did say. You said that you would. You don't give your sons the same advice.
My son doesn't need an abortion. Hello? God.
I can't hear the caller. Hello? Yes, sir? 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Mary. Mary, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Hey, Phil. It's Mary from Nashville. I cannot believe
He hung up.
You tell me that I can't say.
We're right here, Mary. Hold on for a minute. What did you ask me, Ms. Dooley?
What happened to the gentleman I was speaking with?
He is not there. We lost connection to him.
I see. Well, I would like to say that he made a lot of very... insulting accusations, and I don't know why he is not here to defend himself.
He asked you, and I'll ask you again, excuse me, Mary, but I will ask you, why are you giving out advice you won't give to your own sons?
My wife already told you, Mr. Henry, about 4,000 friends.
4,000 friends means bad advice.
My son isn't getting an abortion.
Oh! Did you figure it out yet?
Your son's not getting an abortion, so you didn't give him abortion advice.
Exactly.
All right, Mary, go ahead.
Okay, this is Mary from Nashville. I cannot believe
that
a parent would actually befriend another child and give advice when someone, when another parent has no clue that you're befriending a parent and giving advice about abortion.
No, I didn't say that I didn't tell the parent. I said to this girl's mother, when she asked, she's friends with you? And I said, yes. She said, well, she's not friends with me, my own daughter. And I said, have you taken a good look at yourself in the mirror lately? That's what
but
I said.
But the parent thinks that their child is befriending another child, and Facebook is used.
Of course not. You can see the age of the people. You can see a picture of the people. The kids know that I'm Seth and Dylan and Justin's mom.
Okay.
They don't think they're... Are you familiar with Facebook? Do you know what it is?
Absolutely. But
well, then you know there's no way you're friending someone that you think is a child.
But when you are giving my child... Excuse me, ma'am. Please don't excuse... Yes. Please don't talk.
I'm not talking.
When you are giving my child advice, and you are a parent, okay? When you are
and
a parent,
and you're
giving my...
You know what, Ms. Dooley? Going is interrupting the train of thought of my caller.
I don't understand. I'm listening.
I know, but you're going and it's interrupting the train of thought. Go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. No, I believe when a parent befriends a child, it is not that of an adult.
Yeah. Hold on for a minute, Mary. Hold on for a minute, Ms. Dooley. If your husband doesn't stop that childish in the background, I'll conclude our conversation entirely.
I told you you have to stop.
That's very childish.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mary.
No, I just cannot believe that a parent would befriend a child and give advice and on a topic when you have no clue what that other parent is training their child to do or is a good example to them. And... You know, Facebook is used as a network, you know, socialization for children. It's not for parents to parent other children. How can you do that when, in my opinion, you're acting like a child? You are a child befriending other children, and how can you be a good example as a parent to other children,
but I just,
giving advice that may not be the advice that parent of that child is giving.
You know, I'm hearing a toilet flushing.
This is crazy.
I was trying to listen to what the lady said. Okay.
Yeah, can maybe you muffle the phone while you're using the toilet?
I have been on this program doing everything you've asked me to do. I had to go.
So you're sitting there taking a leak while the lady's talking?
Yes. Is that something else I shouldn't do, too? You know, there have been more rules here tonight on what Bobby Dooley has done wrong. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't talk this way. I talked to
her.
She was going to have an abortion, and I said to her mother, you know why your daughter won't talk to you? Because if you take one look in the mirror, it'll give you every answer you've ever needed. Donut oil. And she said, I don't know what you mean. I said, look. And I said, that's donut oil in a very loud pop.
So you told a woman she's fat?
Yes. In a loud talk. So, Mary, I hear what you're saying. I try to do the right thing. I have tried my whole life. Hold on for a minute.
What? This is crazy.
I have tried my whole life. Well, you know something? I happen to have something wrong with my stomach. I'm sorry. I've tried my whole life to be a good mother and a good wife. And if I'm not being a good friend to the kids that want to friend me on Facebook, then you know something? Sue me. Hello?
Is this... seriously. Are you legitimate or not? I mean,
What are you doing, Ms. Dooley?
Mr. Hendry, I told you that I had a dysentery problem.
You said you'd been to Tijuana to the dog races.
That's right.
Is that the result of that?
Yes, it is.
I don't know of anyone that... Tijuana and the dog races.
You know something? My father loved to go to the dog races. I do it out of respect to him.
All right, Mary, have you pretty much said what you need to say tonight?
I am sitting here driving home from Nashville.
Listening to this woman.
No. So mad at this woman, and
Is this a joke, Ms. Dooley? Are you and your husband having yourselves a good time here?
Well, it's nice to know that you and this lady think that a child in trouble talking about abortion is funny. I don't find it funny.
I think I just got suckered.
Do you think it's funny?
Yes,
a child talking about abortion. A child giving birth to a baby in a bathroom. That's funny. Good God!
Wow!
I didn't hear anybody talking about giving birth to a baby in a bathroom. I heard somebody talking about giving birth to a baby or a fetus or.
Well, there goes the fetus, right there. See, so. If you think that's funny, Phil, that a kid walks into a bathroom stall and then...
Get out of here! 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
All right, coming up next hour, we got Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman coming in and our news hour. But there's a few things. First of all, Bud, what's with the toilet flushing on that lady?
No, she said that she got
nacho platter Caliente. She got a nacho platter at where?
Caliente.
At Caliente. Caliente's a horse track.
No, she said she went to dog race.
She said she went to the dog races at Caliente.
I don't understand, man. Is there dog racing at Caliente?
I don't know, man. But she said she got the nacho or the platter.
Yeah, and a shrimp taco. And she said right after that.
Right after that, what? She's got the problem with the. She's going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Well, I don't believe it. I think that woman was standing there flushing that toilet over and over again just to be funny.
No, I swear to God, man, because I heard her. She was all, you know, like that, and then. Flushed the toilet. I said, are you going to be all right? She goes, yeah, because I got some things I want to say, you know.
What about the husband?
I don't think, well, no. He just said my wife's been doing 180s all day.
180s? All right. I have no idea. That whole story about going to the dog races.
Yeah, said our dad used to love going to the dog races. And so in honor of his passing on this day, like 20 years ago or something, they always go down and they bet the ninth race, and they always bet on not the ninth, but the number nine dog, right?
Yeah, the number nine dog.
What, the last race?
The last race, yeah.
Why?
That's what her dad did. He always bet in the last race the number nine dog.
At the dog races?
Yeah.
Where did she grow up?
But she grew up in Orange County, but her dad used to go to dog races in Mexico.
Yeah.
Boy, that is bizarre. Of all the things to go down to Mexico for, the dog races, he must have come from some other part of the country, you know?
Nope. He was born and raised in California.
Born and raised in California. I don't know a human being alive born and raised in California that gives a crap about the dog races. If a cat goes down to Mexico to watch the dog races, he must come from the East Coast or something, wherever they have dog races.
Well, where do they have them?
Well, the only dog races I ever saw were in Florida. They must have them somewhere back east. I don't know.
No, she said that her father loved dog races.
Well, maybe. My grandfather was into the dog races. My grandfather used to go to Florida to watch the dog races. This is a big, big trip for him. Are you ready for that?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about my grandfather.
Yeah?
He liked to go to Florida for the dog races.
Run that by me again.
Yeah, I don't understand.
What don't you guys understand? My grandfather, right?
Yeah.
You know what a grandfather is?
Yeah.
He liked to go to Florida, the state of Florida.
Yeah.
To watch the dog races.
There's something I'm not getting there.
Yeah, me too. What are you leaving out?
I'm not leaving out anything. I'm going to kick your asses. Everybody's a joker these days. Huh? Everybody's making a big... My grandfather liked to go down to Florida and to Miami. And he was a Toronto. My grandfather was a Toronto, Canada police detective. He was a cop, and his idea of good times was to go down to Miami and go to the dog races. Man, that's what he did.
That weird idea of a good time, but
you know, and I'm sure that he went to Hialeah and Gulfstream and watched the horses. But this dog race thing. So I remember moving to Florida way back in the early '70s when I was a kid. You know, I was working in construction. And we'd go to the dog races. We went to the Seminole Kennel Club, man, up there north of Orlando. And I don't know. It was okay. You know, quinella betting. It was the first time I ever saw quinella betting. And quinella betting eventually made it out to the West Coast.
What's that?
Quinella betting is picking the first three entrants, the first three horses, the first three dogs, in any order. That's a quinella. 877-876-PHIL. Would you rather be richer, skinnier, younger, or smarter? What's the result of that survey? 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dog races? Yes, the dog races.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
According to preliminary information still to be confirmed,
we in New York are Jews and Christians.
I have a 13-year-old in the 7th grade, a 12-year-old in the 6th grade.
I got a letter saying that I need to take my flag down.
Hang in there, honey.
F-U...
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast with a news talk and information and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we'll go anywhere and do anything to get at it. Every night. And the right arm of our great radio show, of course, is our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. You simply must join us there every night as we have live streaming video of our show and live streaming audio of our show, and we have the downloads of each show next day. You can also access a 5-day video archive, and we have hours and thousands and billions of hours of archive material. We have archives of our webisodes, archives of our animated projects, and we have a news feed and a comment section and a guaranteed email response from me, and it never ends, man. The good stuff don't end, you know.
Yeah.
So join us at philhendryshow.com. Now this, you know what, man? I forgot. I wanted you to get me to Fight Bell, bud.
Well, hold on. I can, if you want me to.
Well, it's now everybody knows that we're going to get the Fight Bell because we're going to inaugurate a feature here. I don't know whether we're going to be inaugurating a feature here or whether it's something that, if you've got the Fight Bell, go ahead and lay it on me. Go ahead and lay it on me. That's a fart.
Well, I can't.
Anyway, this is our story of the night. Body of woman missing for 4 months, guess what? Found buried under pack rat clutter. Now, that's got to be some kind of a, if not a first, that's got to be a first for the 21st century. It's got to be a first for a first world country. Maybe not. Well, listen to this story and you tell me. A 4-month search for a missing Las Vegas woman came to a ghastly end this week. 4 months now, understand? You can well imagine what that means. A four-month search for a missing Las Vegas woman came to a ghastly end this week when her husband found her corpse in their home amid a labyrinth of squalor that had been impassable even to search dogs.
Man.
Oh, God. Bill James apparently had no idea that the body of his pack rat wife, Billie Jean, was under the same roof as he helped police scour the home in the Nevada desert for any sign of her.
Wait a minute, man. Wait, hold the phone. The guy's wife missing.
Yes.
And they found the guy's wife in a house.
Yes. Let me finish here. Let me finish.
It's nuts.
Then he's looking for the woman. He had no idea that the body of his pack rat wife, Billie Jean, was under the same roof as he helped police scour the home in the Nevada desert for any sign of her. Then he spotted the feet of the body poking out of a floor-to-ceiling pile of junk Wednesday, revealing in shocking detail the woman's penchant for hoarding.
Wait a minute, man. This is stuff she collected.
Yes. Police say they searched the home several times, even using dogs. Well, guess I think there's some dogs that need to be fired.
No, no kidding.
I think those...
Well, man, you can't blame the dog.
No, I'm blaming the dogs. I'm blaming the dogs. Cadaver-sniffing dog? No, no. Fire the dogs. We now know that the dogs are no good.
No, man, you can't say that. You don't know.
Yeah, I know. I fully well know. We're looking for a body. Really? Yeah, where is it? And who's this husband? Anyway, let me just read this. Police say they searched the home several times, even using dogs from a unit that helped locate bodies at Ground Zero after September 11th and Hurricane Katrina. But they were unable to find the body body amid the piles of clothes, knickknacks, trash, and other junk. For our dogs to go through that house and not find something should be indicative of the tremendous environmental challenges they face, police spokesman Bill Cassell said. And the fact that these dogs are no good. I'm kidding. They're probably fine. I don't know what the house smelled like. Clark County Coroner's Office spokeswoman Jessica Coloma said it would take weeks to determine when and how the 67-year-old woman died. The husband has been cooperative throughout the investigation and quickly notified police of his discovery. One thing is not in doubt about the case. Billie Jean James loved to hoard. It's a behavior that has received new attention this year with two popular reality TV shows, Hoarding Buried Alive.
No, man, they got a name like that? It's only because an old lady going to die.
No. I don't know, but I mean, it's quite... You're right, it is very synchronistic that there is a... what are you looking at?
What do you mean, synchronistic?
It's like coincidence, but it's more than coincidence. It's almost like a coincidence that's meant to be.
That's what?
Synchronistic. Synchronicity.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Thank you.
I don't really know. How do you spell it?
Look it up, bud, okay?
S-I...
S-Y... now I forget where I was.
You're talking about Hoarding Buried Alive.
Hoarding Buried Alive and Hoarders. These are two TV shows, two reality TV shows that have been produced in recent months. The idea of pack rats, of hoarders, of people that collect all this crap, you know, just crap, man. Just crap. Just mounds of crap. Of course, I call it crap. Where would we be were it not for the hoarders? I'll bet you the, some of our greatest archaeological digs was the result of some, like, cat in 3000 B.C. hoarding something, you know.
Probably.
Anyway, a similar situation could be seen at the James home in a desert front cul-de-sac near the Las Vegas Strip. It was the James home in a desert front cul-de-sac near the Las Vegas Strip. In the driveway sits two large trash bins that require industrial-sized trucks to haul them away. The front patio is filled with knickknacks, including old chairs, smaller trash bins, and a 10-foot basketball hoop. Well, wait a minute. If she doesn't throw anything away, what do they need a trash bin for?
I was just going to say that. That's a lie. That's a filthy lie. If they had trash, that means she don't collect everything.
They must have had the trash bins there to haul the crap out of there after they found the old lady's body buried under it. Do you think then maybe they'll throw some stuff away?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it may have sentimental value.
What?
The stuff that the lady's under.
Sentimental value? What are you talking about, sentimental value?
If the guy, if the guy wants to, it might remind him of her. Because now she's dead, too.
The stuff she was buried under?
Yeah.
Why would a guy want to keep the stuff that his own wife was buried under for sentimental value?
Because that was what she was buried under.
Yeah. And plus, people like stuff for sentimental value. Probably remind him of her, you know, the fact, not because she is buried under it, or maybe it was like a menu of a restaurant they went to, it, and she happened to be buried under it.
I'm telling you right now, I don't give a damn if it was a menu that, you know, we'd been to a restaurant with. If it was someone that I loved and they were buried under that crap, I'd get all that crap out of there so fast, I'd have a bonfire. A bonfire.
Well, maybe not sentimental.
Sentimental? Are you guys high? Oh, I want to keep that. You mean the stuff your wife was buried under? And what does this mean, buried under, anyway? What happened, you know?
I bet you she was looking for something, like maybe, you know, the TV guide, and it fell on her.
The TV guide, huh?
Yeah.
Don't you think she'd keep the kid?
What?
She'd keep the TV guide closer to where she's sitting, man, to watch the TV. She ain't got it in a stack of crap. Anyway, sentimental value.
Might be.
Anyway, inside, Cassell said James' piles of clutter left just small pathways to walk and strong odors that hindered their search, generated by, animals, decomposing garbage, food, clothes, and other stuff. If there had been any indication that there was a remote possibility that somebody was back underneath that stuff, we would have taken the appropriate action, Cassell said. Sari Connolly, who walked dogs with James and her husband daily at a nearby park with a group of friends, said the woman bought things at thrift stores each day and accumulated them in the house. She became the hoarder person, and she wouldn't let anyone come in the house, this young lady Connolly says. Connolly said one of Billie Jean's closest friends once asked to use the bathroom at the home after a camping trip, but James wouldn't let her come in. Hmm.
Where'd she go?
Who?
The friend.
I don't know where she went.
Yeah, probably in the bushes.
Well, I don't think she went in the bushes, man. Maybe she held it.
Well,
that ain't the point, man. The point is she didn't let the lady in because she had stuff in the house. Do you understand? So, wouldn't let her in. It sounds like it was beyond control, said Connolly, who had a big banner made to help find James during the search. Approached at the home on Thursday, Bill James declined to speak with an Associated Press reporter. Cassell said initial reports had James last seen walking away from the house in late April. He said along with the dogs, police visited the house several times and searched the desert with a helicopter equipped with infrared detection. Friends and family searched the nearby desert several times on foot, horseback, and with all-terrain vehicles. And they even created a Facebook page to help coordinate efforts while the family offered a $10,000 reward in hopes of finding a woman described as a peace activist who loved hiking, camping, the arts, and garbage.
Doesn't say that, does it?
No, it doesn't say that. That was a bad joke. 9 digital billboards publicized her search. It sounds like she had a lot of people that liked her.
Yeah, I was going to say, she might not have been clean, but she had friends.
Well, I don't even know if she wasn't clean, but the woman, I don't know, man. It's a very weird, it's got to be a sickness.
Oh, now, wait a minute, man. How you call it a sickness?
I can tell you it's a sickness. Anything that endangers your life like that has got to be a sickness. Well, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, what about if a guy want to go parachuting, are you going to say he's sick?
All right, okay, I take it back. I mean, parachuting, you go into that knowing that there is a risk that the chute won't open. You are aware of the dangers, all right? You do it because there is, you voluntarily sort of dance with death. But collecting crap to the extent that it collapses on you and suffocates you, I don't know.
She didn't know it was going to fall on her. All she was doing, looking for the TV guide.
We don't know she was looking for the TV guide, bud. Don't get off on the TV guide. You got people repeating that story now.
Well, what do you think she was looking for?
I don't know if she was looking for anything, man. I don't even know I don't know.
Maybe she committed suicide.
How's she going to commit suicide? She pushed this stuff over on herself?
Maybe.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Committed suicide.
Well, if you're going to kill yourself, man, it might as well be go out with a smile on your face.
Yeah. If you're buried under a lot of dog do, I don't know if she liked it.
I don't think she collected dog do. I think it was just the dogs crapped all through the house, and the place was so cluttered that they just gave up collecting the dog crap. I don't know, man. It sounds funky. Friends and family, they looked, then 9 digital billboards and this, and like I said, she's got a lot of friends. And Connolly said they hired someone to hold a banner in a spot near the home where a woman reported possibly seeing James. This was certainly something that was not glossed over, Cassell said. We did everything that we could. But Connolly said she and friends think police may have botched the search, of course.
I'm trying to figure out how a body couldn't smell so bad. That's what everyone's saying. It's the million-dollar question right now.
Did you smell it, lady?
Well, I'm not a cop. You don't have to be a cop to smell a decomposing body.
The case is not completely surprising given the fact that 2 to 5% of Americans are chronic hoarders, said Dr. David Tolan, a hoarding expert from Hartford Hospital who co-wrote Buried in Treasures to help people who compulsively collect things. There you go. Told you it was a sickness.
I didn't disagree with you.
Every year, there's at least a few deaths that can be attributed to hoarding, he said. All right, we'll be right back to talk more about this story. The lady piled the garbage. She died from garbage falling on her. Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You know, this is nuts. I mean, this whole hoarding story here, it brings to mind, obviously, the eccentricities of certain people. And we live in a fascinating world, obviously, and there's all kinds of people. Some people are just different, but they're not dangerous. Some people are different, and they're only dangerous to themselves. You know, we think so much about the actual active threats in our world to each and every one of us, and as a society, as a community, we guard against it. We bind and gird together to keep those forces away. But what of the people who are in our midst who would never hurt a fly, but they're just weird? They're just weird. And they live with us and they hoard and they wind up hurting themselves, or maybe they never hurt. There's a story And this is an example. You know, I'm always bringing you these stories from World War II, but we'll update it too, because I want to tell you a little bit about Grey Gardens, not the freaking movie with Jessica Lange. I mean the documentary. You got to see this. But in Paris, at the end of the war, when the city was freed and the people were celebrating, they were also doing one other thing. They were looking for collaborators. The city of Paris finally had the shackles of the Nazis thrown off. The American troops, the French, the Free French troops, the British were pouring into the city. It was a city that was partying. I mean, there was nonstop party. Wine bottles were being uncorked, and there were literally stories of women throwing themselves at every soldier they saw. And it was just one big happy time. But there's one other thing they were doing. They were looking for the people that collaborated. They were shaving the heads of the women who had associated with German officers. They were grabbing the known collaborators and dragging them through the streets, putting them in stockades. I mean, and there is a very, very sad story of a man who wasn't a collaborator, but he was just weird. This cat lived on a street in Paris and walked around in a three-cornered hat, dressed like it was the 18th century. The guy wore those breech pants. He wore those buckle shoes. He wore a long tail coat. He had a three-corner hat on, and you'd swear the guy was Thomas Jefferson or something, walking down the street. And he had a harpsichord in his house, and he was just a strange man. Never hurt a soul, but a very eccentric old guy. And as fate would have it, and human nature being what human nature is, this poor guy was grabbed by the resistance, the Maquis, and the people of France that were looking for collaborators, and dragged into the street and beaten. I mean, almost to death. For no other reason than, this guy's got to be bad. Any guy walking around looking like that, he's got to be bad.
Well, I mean, what's he doing dressed like that? You could think he's going to be a Nazi.
Why would you think that, bud?
Yeah, just because the guy dressed like that?
Well, what's he dressed all weird for?
Because he's weird, man. Just like you're weird.
But I'm not weird. I'm not dressed all like I got a hat like that.
I'm just telling you, man, just because a guy's weird doesn't mean that he's a Nazi. But this poor band was victimized by the times as much by the people. The people of Paris were pissed. And anybody that had helped the Nazis, anybody that even suspected they were going to take that son of a gun and they were going to treat, you know. And so, you know, the strange people among us, oftentimes we use that as an excuse to say they're a threat. So here is an old lady, and she didn't threaten anybody. She just collected crap. And these people at Hoard, man, I was telling the guys, you know, before the hour started during the news, I told you guys, remember my friend Rich Driscoll?
Yeah, his grandma.
His grandmother, I'll never forget, Rich and I, you know, we were teenagers. And Rich is living in Boston right now, as a matter of fact. Rich, if you're listening, we were teenagers, and his dad hired us. He said, I'll pay you guys $50 or whatever to move Rich's grandmother from her home to, I think it might have been a retirement home. I can't remember now. One thing I remember about that move is we moved a piano. I never thought in my life that I would ever be able to move. We moved a piano down three flights of stairs.
Like Laurel and Hardy.
It was harder than what Laurel and Hardy had to do, man. I mean, we were going down flights of stairs, you know, one flight, two flight. But the goofiest thing about this move is this woman, a little old lady, and she didn't have a whole lot that she needed, but my God, when we got into the basement, everything, man, she saved everything.
Like what you have, man.
She had, Rich's dad went to Stanford. She had every football program from every football game that they ever had while his dad was going there. And she had all the yearbooks. She had all the newspapers. She had every, it seemed like the woman saved every newspaper and every magazine that came out from 1931 all the way on up to when we were moving the stuff. And it was good. And the first thing you say is, well, we can throw this stuff out. You know, you're thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, man. All we got to do is pull up the dumpster, throw this crap. And, oh, no, she wants that. Huh? Yeah, you guys have to move. I got to move all those. You're going to have to move all that stuff and all those magazines and all those newspapers and all of those, these little colored bottles of with nothing in them. Yes, move all of that. And all of these shot glasses that say, like, Albuquerque. No, yes, move all of that. And these cheap snow globes from the alligator garden. And yeah, move that. I don't know why they're selling snow globes from Florida, but move it. Move it. And what about the water skier? Yeah, move all that. Come on, let's go. Move it all. And I'm telling you, it was one hell of a $50.
Even in way back in the olden times, when you moved it, it probably wasn't enough, huh?
Yeah, way back in the olden times, man, yeah.
When did you move it, man?
1970.
That's the olden times.
All right, so it's the olden times. $50 still wasn't enough. It might have been an olden time money. Speaking of hoarders, there's another group, a couple of guys, the Collier Brothers. Somebody on Twitter sent us the story of the Collier Brothers. You talk about a couple of weird cats. All right, we're coming back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, a Hitler quote in a high school yearbook. And would you rather be smarter, skinnier, younger, or richer, or uglier?
Phil Henry.
I vote for uglier.
Yeah, me too.
All right, now I got a story I do want to read to you, and it's the story of the brothers. I was telling you about these two brothers, these two clowns, the Collier brothers, who were famous hoarders, and I'm reading from Wikipedia. And so the veracity of this is relative, whether it's true. I'm sorry, Wikipedia, but I don't believe in, I've actually had people say this to me with a straight face. I got it off of Wikipedia, which means what? I shouldn't believe it? Wikipedia is far from being a source. If all you're using is Wikipedia, friend, you're in deep, deep, dark doo-doo. Get yourself two or three other sources, then maybe. However, in the interest of time, we will trust Wikipedia. The Collier brothers were two American brothers who became famous because of their snobbish nature, the filth in their home, and their compulsive hoarding. For decades, neighborhood rumors swirled around the rarely seen unemployed men in their home at 2078 Fifth Avenue at the corner of 128th Street in Manhattan, where they obsessively collected newspapers, books, furniture, musical instruments, and many other items. Get this, with booby traps set up in corridors and doorways to protect against intruders.
What are you talking about, man? They want to save it?
I guess. Both of them are obviously mentally ill, you know?
Well, you gotta be, man. You gotta be like crazy. They want to. They think people are going to bust in and steal their garbage?
Now, both were eventually found dead in the Harlem brownstone where they had lived as hermits, surrounded by over 130 tons of waste that they amassed over several decades. They were the sons of Herman Collier, a Manhattan gynecologist who worked at Bellevue Hospital, and Susie Gage Frost, a former opera singer. The parents were first cousins. Aha!
What?
The parents were first cousins?
Oh, man. Yeah, that explains it.
There you go. There you go.
I don't get it. Oh.
For you people didn't see on the radio, because I was moving my eyes together closely.
Yeah. That means inbred.
No kidding. The parents were first cousins. Well, that did it.
Yeah, that probably made the brains kind of yak the brain up or something, you know?
Maybe. You know, I'm actually being facetious a little bit. I don't know whether that's actually going to cause mental retardation.
Are you nuts or something, man? You marry, it's like marrying your sister. That's going to make these guys all weird and live in garbage.
Right, bud, yeah.
What are you talking about, man?
What are you laughing at?
I don't know, man. It's just the fact that they married their first cousin, so that's going to make you want to live in garbage if you're their kid. Anyway, the Collier family traced its roots to a ship that supposedly arrived in America from England a week after the Mayflower. Oh, that's where all the weird asses are on that ship, huh?
Yeah, I bet they said the Mayflower, you go ahead and we'll follow, but we got to stop off and get some thing, man. Maybe they dropped acid or something.
Yeah, they probably were the acid heads.
I don't know, but that sounds really creepy, man. The Collier family traced its roots to a ship that's... Like, it means anything. And I think the guy that wrote this article for Wikipedia, you know, said, this is significant. You know, the fact that these guys were hoarders and lived, I mean, the old man was a gynecologist. He was a doctor. The mother was an opera singer. I mean, that's pretty, I would say, accomplished. Two very accomplished fields. Doctor, opera singer. These two brothers are living in a garbage pit. Why? Because mother and dad were first cousins, and the family arrived not on the Mayflower, but on the ship that came a week later.
Well, what do you think it means?
I don't know, bud. Let's read on. It was a ship that arrived a week after the Mayflower. I think that, you know, see, this is what I mean. It could be a joke, for all I know. Although the guy's got it, it's footnoted. The family was descended from the Livingston family, huh?
Is that the guy that said Dr. Livingston, I presume?
Maybe. The Livingston family, an old and well-established New York family with roots going back to the 18th century. The couple had a daughter, Susan, who died as an infant in 1880. The following year, on November the 6th, 1881, they had their first son, Homer Lusk. And in 1885, Langley was born. They were living in a tenement while Herman interned at Bellevue. As a child, Homer attended PS 69. At the age of 14, he was accepted to the College of the City of New York as a sub-freshman, earning his bachelor's degree 6 years later. So far, so good, huh?
Yeah.
Both sons attended Columbia University, which had just relocated to its present-day Morningside Heights campus, about a 20-minute walk from the Collier house. Homer obtained a degree in admiralty law, while Langley claimed a degree in engineering, though Columbia University states it had no records of his attendance. Aha! There's another one.
Yeah. First there's the cousins of the parents. Now this guy didn't even go to school he says he went to.
I don't know. They said they got no records. And they made an attempt at being an inventor, this guy Langley. Langley played concert-level piano and had long, flowing hair, which was rare in this era. There's a picture of him. Now, this is 1942, and for a guy to have long hair back in those days, it was pretty weird. Over the years, as both brothers' eccentricities intensified, Langley tinkered with various inventions, such as a device to vacuum the inside of pianos and a Model T Ford adapted to generate electricity. Dr. Herman Collier, with his wife and two sons, moved into their residence in Harlem in 1909, when Harlem was an upper-class neighborhood. Now, of course, it's black people. Now, anyway...
Oh, you're going to get in trouble for that.
Well, that's what the inference is. Oh, see, whites were living there, so... You know, it ain't that Harlem is not so much a good neighborhood. It's a black neighborhood. Anyway, when it was an upper... Well, they are saying upper-class. Maybe they're talking about, like, really high-rolling people. Quickly becoming home to some of New York's wealthier residents. I'm not going to read this whole stupid article. What the hell am I doing?
You got to move on, man.
Anyway, these two, read up on it yourself, the Collier brothers, whose parents were first cousins.
Well, you shouldn't be prejudiced.
Oh, get out of here, will you? I thought it was illegal to marry your cousin.
I don't know. I didn't even try looking at me.
Yeah, what about that, Robert? Isn't it illegal to marry your cousin?
Shut up, man. I didn't marry my cousin.
Yeah, really? How come?
Will you shut up, bud? If you're going to tell a joke, don't sit there going, how come?
Why not?
Because if you've got the punchline, you know, timing's everything, man.
Yeah, you blew it, man. Oh, how come? You're trying to say something funny.
I was going to say something funny, and then Phil told me to shut up.
We are all hubgum. How come? Did you have something to say?
I was thinking about it.
Well, then you had nothing to say. Four in ten Americans offered the option of... Now, what? This is a no-brainer, man. I could have given them the answer to this one. 4 in 10 Americans offered the option of getting richer, thinner, younger, or smarter. What do you think they opted for?
Money.
Yeah, I say money.
You're right, money. No kidding. That's only 40%, though, but that's the majority of people. 44% of those polled said they would select richer as their choice. Because if you think about it, man, money, I don't want to say money is where it's at, but money does buy you the freedom to have all the other things. If you want to get smarter, if you want to get thinner, if you want to get cuter, if you want to get fatter, if you want, you know.
Yeah, but some stuff money don't buy.
Oh, get out of here. You're talking about love? You want to know something, man? I bet you if you're rich, you have a better opportunity at finding love.
How do you say that?
Because if you're rich, women are attracted to guys with money, let's face it, you know? And so you're going to have more of an opportunity to meet women, and the odds of you finding a woman that you love will go up.
No.
Yeah.
No, because what if you're rich and you stay inside all the time?
Well, if you're rich and you stay inside all the time, then I guess you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have all the money in the world, but what if you're a hermit? Like this guy.
Like these two clowns that were descended from the cousins?
Yeah.
Then I guess you're a weird ass, and you got all the money in the world, but you ain't going anywhere.
See?
Yeah, that's right. You proved your point. Not.
Well, you just said.
I'm talking about somebody that's got all their marbles, okay? Another 12% in the Adweek Media Harris Poll survey of 2,163 adults said they would prefer to be younger. The remaining 9% opted to stay the same and not change. Ha 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 ha, liar. The answers skewed differently between the sexes and the generations. Among men, just 14% chose thinner, while 29% of women said they prefer to lose weight, because women are judged more on their looks than men are. Age was less of an issue for the ladies. Just 8% said they would choose younger, compared to 16% of the men, because the older a man gets, the more challenging it is for him in terms of career, and career is basically the ego of men. Wealth was most appealing to people aged 35 to 44, with more than half making it their number one choice. It was least appealing to folks 55 and older, because people 55 and older have either made their money or they don't care anymore, I guess. I don't know. I still like money. I'm 57. I love money. Love it, and I want to hoard it, and I hope I'm buried under it, and I die in a pile of it. Now,
really?
No, not really. Although, you know.
There's worse ways.
1 in 5 of those over the age of 55 picked younger compared to just 12% of those 35 to 44. Gee, I wonder why.
Why?
Because if you're younger, man.
If you're younger, man, you're going to pick younger.
Anyway, the group most interested in getting smarter, the 18 to 34 set, with 16% opting for brains. So the 18 to 34-year-olds think they need to be smarter. That's smart.
They're already smart.
It shows that you guys are already smart, yeah, because you want to be smart. All right, and speaking of smart, maybe this wasn't so smart, but I think I kind of get where these kids were coming from, having not even read the story, and I understand the people that were upset with this, but let's just go through this together. It's a fascinating story, and I think it also is reflective of the out-of-the-box way that young people are going to think. That's where kids live, man. They live in that place called out-of-the-box because they've seen the way it's been done. Now they want to do something else. Here's a student named Gabriel, and here is the principal, Michael Koch. They talk to CBS News in Philadelphia, and they talk about the quote that appeared in their high school yearbook, Easton Area High School, Philadelphia, and the quote is the following quote: "And in the last analysis, success is what matters." It's a pretty good quote.
Yeah.
The only problem is they're quoting Adolf Hitler. Here is what Gabriel and Principal Michael Koch said.
I was just surprised that it got through and went through our editors and got into our yearbook.
It was an oversight by our yearbook advisor, you know, during the editing process as well as the administrative team.
I have a bet that somebody said, you know what, let's put that quote in. And someone else said, no, we can't because it's Hitler. And they said, yeah, but it's an interesting perspective coming from a reviled and hated man that even a guy like that would say something like that. And then there was probably a discussion as to whether he actually said that or was that taken contextually from something else. But students from Easton Area High School are talking about more than just Monday's first day of class. They're talking about a quote by Adolf Hitler from the 2010 yearbook. It is, in fact, a quote from Hitler, and it was selected from numerous quotes in various sources. This, according to Michael Koch, who's the Easton Area High School principal. The quote reads, and in the last analysis, success is what matters. It is true. Hitler didn't have too much of that, though, did he? Koch says...
Yeah, a lot of it.
He didn't have a lot of it, not for the stuff he said he was going to do. I ain't going to go through this again, okay? So Koch says printing the quote in the yearbook was a mistake and an oversight by the administration, as you just heard him say. He says someone from a local newspaper notified him about the quote earlier this week. We will have closer revision next time to ensure nothing like this happens again. This is August. When do yearbooks usually come out?
Yeah, they come out in the spring, man. How come it took so long?
I don't know, man. Unless there was a delay or unless this is when their 2010 yearbook comes out at the beginning of the 2010, semester, as opposed to at the end of the... This is the 2010 fall semester as opposed to the winter or spring. When Channel 3 in Philadelphia asked students and parents how they felt about the error, many said they don't think the quote was posted with malicious intent. I think considering the size of the school, mistakes happen. It could bypass people, said parent Linda Leichleiter. I mean, I don't know why they put it in there, said 12th grader Andriana Fennell. I'm sure they didn't mean it in a bad way. Anytime you quote Adolf Hitler, man, you don't have the best of intentions.
Well, what do you mean, man? I mean, you said it was a good quote.
It's a good quote, man. It's something that anybody would say who is intent on having success. But when you quote Adolf Hitler, you could have quoted Dale Carnegie, for crying out loud. You could have, I'll bet you...
George Washington?
Maybe George Washington said that. And in the last analysis, success is what matters.
Yeah, probably Jesus said that.
Jesus? Well, I don't know if Jesus said that, but this doesn't sound like Jesus, you know.
Pythagoras.
Will you shut up? Anyway, when you quote Adolf Hitler, Jack, you mean it in a bad way. Don't give me this crap about I'm sure they didn't mean it bad. All right, we're coming back here on the Phil Henry Show. Boy, this is Saturday morning. Yes! Passengers on a flight are mistakenly told they're going to crash. All right. 877-876-PHIL, our website, philhenryshow.com.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
So anyway, I said I would just update you because the movie came out. They turned it into a theatrical release, you know. By the way, this is the Phil Hendry Show. Welcome back. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way here with me. Now, Grey Gardens is a movie that Jessica Lange did with, there was another actress, and it's a true story. It's based upon two women, Big Edie or Edith Ewing Bouvier-Beale and the daughter, Edith Little Edie Bouvier-Beale. This better be good. Drew Barrymore, that's great, thanks. I don't care.
Well, I just want to know.
I don't care. I would not recommend seeing Jessica Lange and Drew Barrymore in Grey Gardens because nothing is better than the documentary of the real women themselves that was made by the Maisley brothers, Albert and David, who made Gimme Shelter, the Rolling Stone Altamont film. The documentary filmmakers, and this film that they made of these two women, your jaw will be on the floor through the whole movie. You won't believe it. You won't believe it. I'm telling you. First of all, these are Bouviers. You know, Jackie Kennedy, well, that's her maiden name, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy. So they were part of that whole family. Now, The family buys this house. Joseph Greenleaf Thorpe is the father. He marries, Phelan Beale. That's the father. He marries Edith Beale. They move into this house. They have the house. They have the daughter, who is little Edie, as they call her. And the father commences to have an affair and leaves the wife and daughter for another woman. Now, apparently, while little Edie, the daughter, goes off to make her fame and fortune in New York, the mother lives on at this house built in 1897. And where is this thing located, man? Oh, yeah, East Hampton, New York, in the wealthy Georgica Pond neighborhood. Now, you're watching this movie, and I'm watching this flick, and I'm going, well, okay, is these two rich? Wait a minute, they're not really, well, they sort of are rich. Wait, is that a hole in the wall that I see and a raccoon that she's feeding? And the kitchen looks like a big kitchen, but it's got, there's paper plates, and they're serving wine with the screw cap, and there's something wrong with these two women. And as you watch this movie, you realize they're living in what was once a really beautiful home, but has fallen into disrepair. One of the reasons being the handyman died, and these two women are so insular and so, unsocial, that they never really connected with the world in a normal way. So this house falls into disrepair. They're living in this thing increasingly with stacks of garbage every place. This is the Bouvier family, a wealthy family. Jacqueline Kennedy, at some point in the early 1970s, I think it was right after the documentary came out, and saw how her relatives were living, paid to have the garbage hauled away. The tab was 30 G's.
Are you kidding me?
That was the tab to haul the garbage out of this house. $30,000. But they continued owning this house, and it was the two of these women living together in this world of memory. They were remembering the good times in New York City. They were remembering friends that little Edie had. They were remembering the famous people that they knew. At one point, some obviously a well-heeled couple comes to visit them, and they're serving them off of paper plates and screw cap wine. And little Edie is out of her mind because she never goes anywhere without this really tight, like almost like a swimming cap style hat she wears everywhere, man.
Maybe she got no hair.
I don't know. And then, like, in the middle of the night, she puts on marching music and starts marching around the house with a baton. Now, you may think they're crazy. That's the first thing. Well, they're nuts. They're functionally nuts. But after Big Edie dies, Little Edie leaves. She lives in New York for a while. She moves to Miami. And the end of the movie is the audio of a phone call between David Maisley and Little Edie. And they're talking. And this is 2000-something. And she's talking about her life now in Bal Harbor. And she's obviously older, and she's obviously still weird, but she's not nuts. She lived on her own after her mother died. She moved from New York back to Florida, and she's obviously got a thing for David Maisley, who was one of the filmmakers, because she's saying, oh, David, I wish you and I would have gotten together. I mean, it's out there, man. You got to see the documentary.
Okay, what's it called?
Grey Gardens.
Spell that.
I'm not going to spell that.
Here, man, right there.
Spell it. Show is produced by Jason Rance, our technical director, Charles Wagon, and our associate producer this evening, screener John Werick. Thanks, John. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget, philhendryshow.com for all your radio needs. Later and greater. See you Monday. And don't forget, Sunday night, Phil.